Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. This is going to be an empowering hour. We have the latest research on new information just out today about how a compound, a simple natural compound, inexpensive, easy to get, can actually prevent the coronavirus from entering your human cells. That's good news. That's life-saving news. So we'll be sharing that. And I want to thank all of you for telling other people about the articles and everything else that we're sharing, because this is the one place you can go to every day and download all the material, not just what I'm saying now, not what you're watching now, but we load in dozens and dozens of studies and documentaries and footnotes so that you know there's good scholarship, not just opinion. I approach nothing from a political perspective. I don't share my political views. I don't allow this forum to be used for that. Instead, just the truth. So I'm going to do a commentary. What motivated the commentary? The Pope? Yeah. Yesterday, he made some statements about the dangers of the woke culture, how pervasive it is, how destructive it is, how it denies the value of the human spirit, working as we have historically, cooperatively together. You wouldn't know that we had a civil rights movement. You wouldn't know that millions of people participated, showing that they valued all life, that all lives matter. You wouldn't know that if you just listened to the woke culture, the identity politics culture, the cancel culture. You'd think we are all just hate-filled individuals who hate others because we're Caucasian and other people are not, that we're privileged and other people are not. I'm going to challenge that in a civil manner. But after reading early this morning, very early, what the Pope had to say, there's a new commentary. It'll be shared today. Please go to GaryNall.com and share it with others. Let us begin. Research shows hemp, yeah, hemp oil, hemp protein, compounds prevent coronavirus from entering human cells. Oregon State University just did a study showing that hemp compounds identified by a technique, it's a chemical screening technique invented at the Ohio State University, Oregon State University, shows the ability to prevent, that's the key, preventing the virus that causes COVID-19 from entering the human cells. A Dr. Bremen and collaborators, including scientists at Oregon Health and Science University, found that a pair of cannabinoid acids bind to the SARS-CoV-2 spike protein, blocking the critical step in the process the virus uses to infect people. The compounds are a particular type of acid. It is called a cannabidiolic acid, a CBGA, and the spike protein is the same drug target used in the COVID-19 vaccines and antibody therapy. So this is important. So now one more way, one more piece of the puzzle to help prevent the COVID spike protein from harming us. Now most people like a delicious tomato sauce, especially one that is slowly made, becomes sweeter and allowing the natural oils, the natural flavors to emerge when you do slow cooking. Learned that when I was in Italy, one of my trips to Italy. I learned that when I was in a little tiny restaurant on the Italian, near the Mediterranean. In fact, it overlooked the Mediterranean. Small, only held about 8 people, and there were 8 of us in my group, my brothers and friends that went over there. And here's this older woman by herself, and she asked what we want, and I said, well, you know, they're going to eat what they want to eat, and everything there was fresh, and she had a garden outside, and I watched her go out and pick the herbs. I thought it was just terrific, and she had all these tomatoes, and I watched her holding the tomatoes, and so I asked her, I said, ma'am, what are you doing? She says, well, when the tomato is ripe, it's heavy at the bottom, and that means it's natural sugars, and that's the one you want. And she picked that. And she made me a pasta. Now, interesting, I don't eat wheat. I'm gluten intolerant. However, there, because of how it's grown and no sprays used and how it's ground, so that you're getting the whole grain, I was able to tolerate it completely. One of the most delicious sauces I've ever encountered. And yet I smelled that sauce when we entered this little place. And she said that they will take hours to cook the sauces to allow it to have their wonderful taste. Anyhow, the base of that was tomatoes, and then lots of garlic and olives, three or four different types of olives, and olive oil, and cilantro, and basil, dill. It was all in there. And so I had this wonderful pasta dish. Just could have been happier. Tomatoes, which in Europe are very common, not so much in the United States. Tomato concentrate could help reduce chronic intestinal inflammation associated with HIV. This is from the University of California at Los Angeles, and the research team found that a certain type of tomato concentrate added to the diet can reduce intestinal inflammation that is associated with HIV. I would say it would be good for any form of intestinal inflammation. So think of all the itises that can accelerate arterial disease, which in turn can lead to heart attacks and strokes. So what goes on in your intestine, just like what goes on in your mouth, the bacteria in your mouth can directly either contribute to a heart attack or stroke or brain infection, or help you fight off these good bacteria or bad bacteria. The sugars you eat, the highly acidic food, bad bacteria. And then the good foods, proper oral hygiene, making sure your gums, your teeth are healthy, clean, good bacteria. So when you have tomatoes, especially if you get a tomato sauce, that can help turn off inflammation in the gut. Now, if you add coconut oil into that, it's even further exacerbates, not exacerbated, it further accelerates the healing process inside the intestine. That's why every morning in my health shake, I take a teaspoon of olive oil, a teaspoon of flax oil or hemp oil, a teaspoon of coconut oil. And that helps the heart, the brain, turns off inflammation throughout the body, including in your intestine. Now, when you make a tomato sauce, I make it with both first coconut oil, but then at the end of the cooking, always at the end, add olive oil, never at the beginning. And then you've got two of the finest oils in nature. So this is important. Just one more study here that shows clues to how the altered intestinal tract affects disease-causing inflammation in people with infections, including HIV infection. That's good. Also, we're a society that sits. We've been sitting for a long time, way too much, in front of computers, at work, at home, in front of televisions. Not good. Too much sitting could mean worse outcomes for cancer survivors. Interesting, because recently I was working with a person with literally terminal cancer. In fact, when the daughter called, the person was in the process of dying and couldn't. In fact, the daughter actually thought her mother was dead, didn't get any response, eyes wouldn't open, and that's when I got the call. So we went to work. And 1 month later, the person was up, immune markers improved. The cancer pain substantially gone, the dizziness and all the symptoms from the chemotherapy were gone. And I remember the person saying, "I don't want to walk, it's hard." And I said, "But it's the walking, the movement, the oxygenation and use of your muscles that's important." And here this study just reconfirms that. Also, getting oxygen therapy, hyperbaric therapy would be ideal every day for a person with cancer, every day, because cancer cells do not thrive in a high oxygen medium. You don't even have to have hyperbaric. You can buy yourself an oxygen machine. They're not expensive. A repurposed one can go for $500. Brand new, it's around $1,000. And it's simply a machine that creates oxygen at 85 to 95%. You put on an oxygen mask. You can sit at your desk or any place and breathe it in for an hour. And when you're breathing in that pure oxygen, does that really help people with COVID and cancers and chronic fatigue and infections and viruses? You bet. So just something to think about. Anyhow, the more the person exercised, the more they complained. And I said, you may not feel comfortable exercising because you spend so much time in bed, but the exercise is helping you. This latest study shows exactly that. This is from Cancer Care Alberta in Canada. A new study shows that those who sit too much and are not physically active are much more likely to die early from cancer or other causes than those who are more active. That's important. So, exercise every day, even if you have, especially if you have cancer. They're saying a cancer survivor should exercise 150 minutes a week. I say 300 minutes a week, moderate to vigorous. A new study, a brand new study, shows that running or real fast power walking could improve brain function in people with Gulf War illness. Texas A&M University has shown that the 700,000 American troops responded to the invasion of Kuwait in the first Gulf War. And more than a third of those troops still suffer from the condition Gulf War illness, previously labeled Gulf War syndrome. It's characterized by persistent reduced cognitive function, memory problems, mood and sleep disorders, chronic pain and fatigue, and it's real. The exact cause is not known. We do believe that the vaccines they were given, which were experimental, including a botulism vaccine and anthrax vaccine, among 10 others, with squalene, are probable cause. But we also know that the vets were exposed to biological and chemical weapons in the theater, even though that was denied by Colin Powell. It wasn't, he wasn't telling the truth. Our investigations, my reports on it, the first in American media, showed that when we spoke with the vets, including doctors who were vets over there, they said, yeah, we had bombs going off, there'd be a yellow haze. Suddenly, you know, about 2 or 3 minutes later, your throat would be burning, your skin would be burning. And then people would come in hazmat suits the next morning, bulldozers would come in and clearing the whole area and then say nothing happened here. Yeah, just more cover-up. In any case, these people were also given a drug, a prophylactic drug called PB. It was a bromide, very toxic. And then they were also given the mosquito repellent, DEET, and that also was bad. They were given insecticide, PER, and multiple pesticides, low-dose sarin they were exposed to. So all this plus the stress caused Gulf War syndrome. So now what do we do? Well, I work with a lot of these people. I work hundreds of Gulf vets helping them get back their health and at the Tri-State Healing Center. Never charged them, by the way. They were all treated for free. So now what they're finding is one thing makes a big difference. Running a few times a week could be powerful in the relief of all those symptoms. Now, not everybody can run, but everybody can power walk. And if you do it really fast, I mean real speed walking, makes a big difference. Also, something else makes a big difference is intravenous vitamin C drips twice a week at 50,000 milligrams, ozone therapy, and lots of bitter melon juice. Yeah, a glass a day of bitter melon juice. There's a lot more that could be done, but these are easy and simple to do. Also, there's brand new information on why high-dose vitamin C kills cancer cells. Now, low levels of what is called catalase, C-A-T-A-L-A-S-E, it's an enzyme, and it makes cancer cells vulnerable to high-dose vitamin C, according to the University of Iowa. Now, vitamin C has a good history of working with cancer patients, but the University of Iowa believes that it works because it is it is used in such a way that you have to have enough of it, and you can't get enough orally, but you can intravenous. So they've shown that giving vitamin C intravenous and bypassing normal gut metabolism and exertion pathways creates blood levels that are 100 to 500 times higher than levels seen by just taking it orally. It is this super high concentration in the blood that is the crucial element, because vitamin C has the ability to attack cancer cells. Earlier work by the University of Iowa redox biologist expert Gary Buettner found that at its extremely high level, vitamin C selectively kills cancer cells but does not harm normal cells, and that's important. And physicians at the University of Iowa Hospital and clinics are now testing the approach in clinical trials for pancreatic cancer and lung cancer that combine high-dose intravenous vitamin C with standard chemotherapy and radiation. Now, here's a better story. That's good, and I'm glad to see that they know this. But here's some information for the journal Redox Biology, where Dr. Buettner published his study. First, there was a doctor that we all have to give credit to, because he was the first to actually do vitamin C at high doses. Down in Reidsville, North Carolina, this is where this all began. And this doctor was using 50,000 milligrams, at that time considered an obscene amount of vitamin C, but he was getting good results. I visited him. And in that conversation, I said, "Have you gone beyond this?" "No, I won't go beyond that." I said, "Why not?" He said, "Because we don't know the outcome." So I took that information back, and on myself, for 2 years, every day, 6 days a week, I would get more and more vitamin C till I built up to 200,000 milligrams. Every week, I would get a comprehensive analysis done through Roche Lab, and these were expensive tests, upwards of $2,200 a week in blood tests on myself, because I'm thinking, maybe they've got it all wrong. Maybe just using chemotherapy and radiation, we're seeing at least 55 to 60% of the patients die, and possibly more, from the therapy, not the cancer. So maybe we're just all on the wrong track, but because there's so much money and so much reputation invested, we're not willing to say, let's do something different. But there had to be a guinea pig somewhere, so I made myself the guinea pig. And my immune system was just out of this world. There was a Dr. Asa, one of the leading physiologists from Israel, who came to the United States to do some studies. He heard about the work that I was doing, came up to the institute and in the lab, and he would come every day. And then I would show him. I would sit there, and you weren't aware of this, but I was doing my radio show with a four-hour drip of vitamin C in my arm every day. And I had a pole, and I'd walk around the office, but that was in there. I did so much vitamin C, it closed my veins. So it's hard to get a vein now. In any case, when he saw what I could do, he brought me down to his laboratory. And then we brought five of the elite athletes down. And he said, "I want you to get on these machines. We're going to hook you up, heart monitors, etc. I want to see how long you can go." The machine I was on actually broke. I was on for over 2.5 hours at a full elevation. He had never seen this before, never been done. I said, "This also has to do with having a strong immune system." And then we went through the immune blood workup in great detail. From that, I felt confident then to start using on patients through the institute, through our medical team, 22 medical board certified people on our team. And we just started to see amazing results. When I say amazing, I mean nowhere else in the world would you see these results. I don't care what the condition was. We were seeing end-stage pancreatic cancer. What they're testing for now, with the hope of finding results, we were reversing. Glioblastomas, astrocytomas, lung cell, everything you can imagine, including on my own father and my own brother. So This is what we were doing. Then we were having members of our running and walking club come in, volunteering, and once a week getting a vitamin C drip. And their immune cells were up and their T cells were up, even though the average long distance runner, the T cell drip drops below 200. And at that time, in the mid 1980s, if you had fatigue and under 200 T cells, it was a diagnosis for AIDS, HIV infection, even though there was no HIV. So our immune systems were strong. But we also saw that you build up to it gradually, and you also infuse, in the same drip, you infuse glutathione and vitamin B12 and other nutrients. And now the body is, the liver is really detoxifying. So anything that can cause cancer, including the cancer cells we all create, the natural killer cells are stimulated to be far more powerful when you have vitamin C intravenous. So thousands upon thousands upon thousands of patients were treated. Guess what? 1,200 people with full-blown AIDS, not just asymptomatic with HIV, I'm talking about really sick people. One person I remember one morning coming in, and one of the doctors, I think it was Dr. Robbins, was working with him. He said, "Gary, come in here for a moment." And he introduced me to the patient. He said, "I want to introduce you to Gary." And he said, "Well, I'm here because I listen to Gary's show, and my regular therapy, AZT, was just killing me. He said, 3 days ago, I had to crawl from my bed to the bathroom about 15 feet. I couldn't walk. I was so sick. And I just threw up, and I laid there thinking, I'm going to die today. And here was a whole bowl of about 22 different drugs I was taking. I just poured them all in the toilet, said, if this is what I got to look for, I'm just going to die. And I crawled back into bed, and I didn't take any more drugs that day. And then I called. And so here I am. He opened his mouth, and the doctor took a tongue scraper and brought out all this white, it looked like cotton, and it was thrush. And this was in his lungs. And a whole cupful he took out. So he said, the doctor said, "Gary, what can we do about thrush in his lungs and his intestines? Got this everywhere. A lot of people are dying of this, not just pneumocystis or Kaposi's sarcoma." So I whipped up a formula, including bitter melon and all the different known anti-yeast herbs, and including niastatin, and within 2 days it was gone, the yeast. All the other conditions were there. 16 months later, he had no AIDS. He was completely healthy. He was one of the 18 that seroconverted completely. So he was getting vitamin C drips. He was on an accelerated program. The regular people who come in once a week, oh, this is on the accelerated program, came in 6 days a week for 4 hours. And that, by the way, is the subject of a brand new documentary, the most winning documentary in the world, number one in the world this year. You wouldn't know it existed. It's called The Cost of Denial. Won all these important prestigious international film festivals, narrated by multi-award-winning, outstanding investigative journalist Celia Farber. So watch it. In any case, the idea is that we could have tremendous benefit if we increased our vitamin C orally. Here's the key to taking it orally. This is also helpful. When you take 8,000 milligrams of vitamin C orally, you're at a therapeutic level. You're really going to stimulate helping with all the different conditions in your body. But a lot of people are going to have the hydrochloric acid in their stomach hit the ascorbic acid and vitamin C, causing hyperacidity and diarrhea. Take your vitamin C in buffered form in a protein shake and make the shake in the morning, and then put what you feel your body can tolerate, 6, 8, 10,000, 12,000 milligrams. Linus Pauling used to take 18,000 milligrams a day. Put it in the shake and then drink the shake every couple hours throughout the day. You'll get twice as much vitamin C. You won't get diarrhea. And now you're getting what you would get if you were taking it intravenous at the lower dose, intravenous. And that can be very important. All right. Also, good news from the University of Leicester, which is in the United Kingdom, people with early onset Parkinson's disease may benefit by boosting niacin, N-I-A-C-I-N, in your diet. The team studied the mutation in fruit flies that mimic the human disease, and niacin, or vitamin B3, is found in a variety of foods, including nuts, and I suggest just a vitamin that has niacin in it, and it boosts your levels of NAD. Now, NAD is a super compound. It's one of the top 10 anti-aging compounds. And the compound in the body is for energy generation and DNA repair, which is critical for keeping the mitochondria, your energy factories, and giving you energy in shape and keeping Parkinson's at bay. Now, drugs that block NAD consuming DNA repair already exist to treat cancer. So they're going to go that direction, repurposing to protect the faulty mitochondria in Parkinson's disease. But I'm working with Parkinson's. I've helped reverse Parkinson's. And you've heard those people on this radio show. You've seen them. They were in a 16-month brain research clinical study I did, and where we reversed myasthenia gravis, all these diseases. So you should at least look at those individuals who are reversing, improving their condition without the drugs first, because the drugs don't stop Parkinson's. They've never cured Parkinson's. We have. So something to think about. All right. Just start with NAD and start with PQQ and start with non-flush. And that's the key, non-flush. Niacin, because if you take too much niacin, your whole body just goes beet red and start to itch, and you think, oh my God, am I having a stroke? No, that's called a niacin flush. That means you've taken too much, but you can take a non-flush niacin. All right? And we'll wrap it up here with, well, you know something? That's enough. Let's take a break. When we come back from the break, adding on to the words of wisdom from the Pope about the dangers of our cultural society right now and the moral panic. I call it America's crisis of cultural moral panic. The article, which was quickly put together, Richard Gale and myself, is on GaryNoll.com. If you find it of value, what I'm about to share, please share it with others. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Gary Noll. Nice to have you with us. And please share this information if you find it of value, if you find it reasonable. I'm going to share some insights that I hope that you find important in better understanding much of the balkanization of our society today in the United States. And it's fully by intent by those in power who want to maintain their power forever. And they're aligned with the deep state and corporate America. This is the worst form of crony capitalism and vulture capitalism. And we are the victims. But it goes beyond that. And here's what we need to understand. It is one thing to show a man that he is in error and another to put him in touch with truth. No man's knowledge can go beyond his experience. Who said that? That was John Locke, L-O-C-K-E. Many of this audience, I'm sure the older generation, you're familiar with Locke's work, especially Essays Concerning Human Understanding. Locke was not alone in questioning what we believe to be true knowledge and pointing out the consequences of failing to discern falsehoods from reality. Locke was in excellent company. Due to the scientific revolution, which inspired several generations of deep thinkers, naturalists, and philosophers, including Rousseau, Immanuel Kant, Spinoza, Darwin, Bacon, Voltaire. Well, those are just some of the names from the Age of Enlightenment or the Age of Reason. And that has dominated the intellectual world of ideas for nearly two centuries. Locke's statements remain pertinent because today there is a new generation, not all by any means, in fact, not even the majority, but a very toxic minority that has been indoctrinated by the shortcomings of scientific materialism. It was intended to bring forth a new purity, an idyllic perfectionism of thought and beliefs, founded alone upon objective inquiry. But now this higher ideal has degenerated into a juvenile revolution fueling identity politics, the cancel culture of wokeness, and a passionate microaggression that derives hedonistic pleasure in ridicule and insulting others. One of its more lofty goals is to end free speech, including on Pacifica, as we know it. And except for those who are woke, and then they should have unlimited speech. Other goals rewards earned through effort and achievement. Okay, but that doesn't seem like they want that. We want that. We want to show the strength of character, honesty, morality, inclusiveness, cooperation. No, they want a faux, meaning false, fake, collectivism, and to abolish meritocracy or social rewards earned through achieving something that is both uniquely individualistic but also supporting the common good. For many years, important voices of critical thought, think of Noam Chomsky, Henry Giroux, Jordan Peterson, to name a few, have been warning us that this day was rapidly approaching. However, since there is no dynamic leaders in the youth woke movement, it's more to me of a Maoist style cleansing and purging of wrong views, wrong attitudes, wrong beliefs. And most of us in the older generations wrongly assume it would be a passing phase. All this nonsense would come and go. It's not going to go. No, in fact, the consequences of this unleashed furor, evidenced by the absence of self-reflection and critical thought, has been channeled into a mob rule of dissent and abuse, emotional and physical violence. In the virtual world gatherings of protest across social media, it's nearly unstoppable. No one is challenging them, neither the mainstream media nor the majority of academia. Rather, corporate leaders and persuasive voices within the ranks of liberal democratic institutions, to my amazement and my embarrassment, for what they say they represent, are coming to their aid. They're enabling these fools. Therefore, it proceeds under the cover of a silent political power to sustain its energy. On the other hand, today's youth have every reason to feel disenchanted and to suffer rampant existential angst, the emptiness of not feeling a deeper sense of purpose and meaning in the world at large. American neoliberalism and our educational system's single-minded attention on science and technology, which in themselves are amoral disciplines and rote memorization and testing, has resulted in two decades of our youth becoming increasingly illiterate in almost everything, the humanities, critical evaluation, and reflective inquiry. The desire to know the true meaning of life in others, in the planet, in sentient beings, is simply non-existent. It is also the most irreligious generation in American history. Without the skills of introspective thought to develop a sense of genuine well-being and true happiness, or what Plato called the eudaimonia, as opposed to hedonia, meaning the pursuit of temporary or transient pleasures. Everything today is the instantaneous hedonic philosophy. I want my pleasure and I want it now. But at what cost to yourself or society? That is irrelevant, but it's highly relevant to those who could be victimized by it. Our nation has tossed its youth to the rabid dogs of social Darwin, rat race for survival. Therefore, it is not surprising that suicides among today's teens and 20-somethings has risen 47% in the last two decades. Sadly, the causality rate of all this is higher after we consider there are 36% more people living in their 20s today than there were at the turn of the century. 32% of youth through their 20s have clinical anxiety disorders. 1 in 9 suffer from depression, and almost 14% have ADHD. Although the medical community would like us to believe these are either inherited or biological conditions attributed to brain chemical imbalances, how many times have we heard that? There is absolutely no scientific consensus proving there is a direct, observable, causal relationship between brain function and your mental state. Certainly there are correlated relationships, but correlation is not causation. The latter is solely a belief, an assumption, a hypothesis, a theory, without any conclusive or confirming data. And that's the entirety of the mental health field today, and the insurance companies supporting that. The causes are elsewhere, and perhaps to be found in our dysfunctional society and the complete breakdown of traditional ethical structures and universal values. Just give you one example. In 1996, when I moved to Southern Florida, I found something interesting on my first day. It was in the evening, early evening, the sun was still out, it was in the summer, and it wouldn't get dark till about 8:30. And as I was driving around, I saw how the stores were closed early. But street after street, I found that, well, there was a fruit store, and the fruit baskets were outside with the fruit in them. And there was a horticultural store with all the different plants, beautiful hanging plants on racks, all outside. There was a feed store, again, all the feed outside. All these different stores understood that the common moral and ethical standard for that society was, do not steal from us. We're your neighbors, we're your friends. We'll be there to help you in your time of crisis. Let us enjoy this time together. As a result, there was almost no crime. There was no ghetto, because people cared about their society and one another. And I thought, how remarkable. Now, recently, just a few days ago, when I was going to a farmer's market early on a Saturday morning, and I go to the farmer's market, and by the way, I wear a shield and my ionizers and a mask, N95 mask, and gloves and a hat, because a lot of people don't realize that, yes, about 50% reduction in the amount of viruses in the air after about, oh, it could be about 5 minutes, but still, when you're with a lot of people in a farmer's market, you could have 1,000 people over a two-block period. It's just packed. None wearing masks. You don't know their status. And now we know that those who are vaccinated are the ones who are the most dangerous. They're the super spreaders. They're also the ones creating the variants. And now we also know, though I'm not going to get into it now, that they're the ones who are having their cells adversely affected, especially their immune cells. In any case, so I get there before anybody gets there. I get there, I go, a suggestion for you also, I get there just about a half hour before they set up their stands, when they're just unloading their trucks and other things, and I make my selections, and then I leave. Simple. But I noticed stores still had all their stuff outside. A quarter century later, and still there are communities in the United States that respect one another and know that it is wrong to steal, no matter what excuse you may give it. And so it warmed my heart. It was such a wonderful thing when I saw all the plants outside, the fruit baskets outside. And I thought, good for them. They still trust. Now, how about doing that in Chicago, Philadelphia, Atlanta, Washington, D.C., San Francisco, Los Angeles, New York? No. No, you'd have everything stolen. And justifiably so in the mind of the thief. So you see, this also is just one of the indicators that not everything and not everyone in society is coming from the breakdown of traditional ethical structures and universal common values. In 1972, South African sociologist Stanley Cohen proposed the moral panic theory. Maybe you've heard of it, maybe not. It's an irrational, widespread fear that threatens one's sense of values and safety and cohesive relationship to your own identity. This moral panic, Cohen observed, is bolstered by the injustices of the ruling elite and its mouthpiece in the media. It also centers around those who society marginalizes and is based upon ethnicity and class and sexuality and nationality and religion and cultural backgrounds. And it's very distinct. Those who have don't have the problems of those who have not, who have the problems. One is considered of worth, the other is considered of no worth. For example, when was the last time anyone in this audience was invited into local, state, or federal agencies to give their insights and opinions about problems we have and solutions that we may be able to embrace? How about never? And yet the people running every one of those have the personality of sociopaths, self-interested. They don't care what they do as long as they can continue their power. How do we benefit? How have we been bettered by their opinions and their laws? We have not. Everything has degenerated, everything in our society over the last 50 years. Ashley Grossman, writing for ThoughtCom, makes the point that those in power will ultimately most benefit from moral panics, yes, since they lead to increased control of the population and the reinforcement of authority of those in charge. The panic aroused grassroots movements provides the government or state to enact legislation and laws that would seem illegitimate without the perceived threat at the center of the moral panic. Ever notice a temporary law, like the Patriot Act, becomes permanent and expands to where they are not questioned? It just becomes something they do. The government has massive billion-dollar contracts all the time, and we never know the outcome or whether we need it, but it's just going to continue. Well, the popular fear of COVID-19 virus and the unvaccinated, created by our federal health agencies and officials and all their news media allies, is another recent example of moral panic theory. Unfortunately, most of the country has entered a moral panic phase, a vitriolic propaganda campaign by both parties, the greed and optimism and opportunism to be able to be optimistic about knowing that you have power with corporate elite over everyone, whether you're the alt-right or the woke left. Both are dysfunctional. Both are illegitimate. Both are destructive, but they have power. Repeatedly woke students are demanding their schools and colleges make assurances that they are emotionally safe from ideas and philosophies that challenge their fragile, hypersensitive comfort zones. How'd they get that way? Rarely do you see this in working class people because they confront real life every day. They see it for the best and worst that it is, and they've learned to survive it. They've learned not to personalize everything. They've learned that they can't change everything, but they should not allow what is outside of their control to control them. And yet the elite How many elite do we have? Well, we have 16 million professional class, your professors, scientists, lawyers, engineers, doctors, jurists. And then you have millionaires, another 12 million more or less. So you put together with their families, you have a cocoon. You have the ultimate group of opinion makers and policy leaders. And these are the people who tell us what we should think, what we should read, what we should watch. They're the ones who can green light television programs, concerts. They're the ones who will take a mediocre talent and suddenly preach to us that they are great. And we're seeing movies that are terrible, terribly written. The asinine new movie about, Don't Look Up. One of the worst acted, worst written, worst plots, non-feasible, nonsense. And yet, we're told it's great. It's not great. None of these films are great. The actors are all artificial constructed, yet they're promoted because they're of value. They're part of that inner circle of those who can control profit streams and get you to believe, oh, that singer's got a great voice. No, singer doesn't have a great voice. Compared to what? Compared to whom? No. But this is how we live today. Teachers and professors who challenge their students' illusions about knowledge and their fragile self-identity are being ostracized with calls for administrative dismissal, Title IX investigations, destroying a professor's life. How many academicians are forced to remain silent or to teach at the lowest level where no critical thinking is done? Nothing that would cause a student, one student in a class or more, to feel, I don't understand what you just said, therefore I feel threatened by you, therefore I'm going to call my mom, who's a lawyer, who's then going to call the school, and we're going to do something about you. You shouldn't be here. Where's my pet dog? And as a result, the consequences is that we now have, listen carefully, a new, I'm calling it the woke Inquisition. Yes. Such student actions are indicative of their weak sense of self-worth and existential angst. Yet we must look at modern parental upbringing and our culture's leading elders, as noted by Jonathan Haidt, to diagnose the causal factors for this psychological catastrophe of two entire generations. It's almost 50 years. Consequently, when collective panic reaches a threshold, the Cohen's theory might explain the sudden eruption of irrational behavior entangled in the rise of a cancel culture built upon an intellectual anarchy that is frighteningly irrational. It is equally endemic to the reactionary malfeasance of white supremacists and militias. So when a new book emerges like White Fragility by Robin DiAngelo and becomes the holy grail of woke truths, then she represents the ultimate chief inquisition leader and her disciples, the priests, that went village to village to look at the heretics, call them out, find them, and then punish them until they were completely submitting to the new woke truths. We are lectured that we will not be tolerated. We, you, me, the majority, the silent majority, the independents, the dwarf Democrats and Republicans, we will not be tolerated if our thoughts or actions or cultural history is not completely under their control. If there's any deviation or heresy, its espoused, twisted, emerging social norm will be enacted. The authority's central theme is that if you had the misfortune of being born with the wrong genes, into the wrong family, with the wrong skin color, you are a racist and will be such for the remainder of your days. Insane? Yes. Immoral, yes. Unethical, yes. Lacking in spiritual common sense or any humanistic value, yes, yes, yes. But academia is a cowardly group hiding in the shadows of their own incompleteness. These are the people that feel superior when they're in a classroom, where their books or their videos are their tools. But take away that and put the masses in front of them of the woke culture, and suddenly they cry like children. Hence, every white person is condemned with a defective moniker blazed across the forehead. And since meritocracy likewise is damned, spiritual achievement damned, giving and a sense of compassion for others damned, caring about those who suffer around the world damned, caring about those 38 million Americans who are going to bed hungry, and you care, you're damned. Caring about the planet, damned. Caring about animals, damned. Caring about the cobalt that is mined by slave labor in Africa, damned. So everything that is ethical and right and has been, the cooperation of those working together in peace and harmony, not seeing the color of the skin, but the trueness of their heart, damned. Damn you for thinking anything else but what we demand. And anything that you've done, no, we're reducing it to an inherited privilege of having been born Caucasian. You have no value. You are the gutter snipe if you are Caucasian. Interesting, because this entire commentary was motivated by the Pope, who is Caucasian. But is he a racist? No, he is not. Your attempt to defend yourself and profess your free speech is a testament to your heresy. No apology or act of humility can save you. Just listen to the racists over on MSNBC and CNN and NBC and read the tropes from the racists on the New York Times, all professing to be anti-racist, but absolutely the worst racist today. Yes, and they're clueless about their own racism. Wow, white fragility is already being taught in many schools with the full cooperation of the teachers' unions. Shame on them, but there is no shame there, only politics and school administrators. Resistance will be a subversive act, an admission of your racism. It is critical to observe this may be heading towards a new paradigm of Orwellian social control. Yet there is barely a shred of credible scientific evidence to support D'Angelo's hypothesis. It is a flawed opinion, and a dangerous one at that. Worst, it has long reached its conclusions, could advocate for a repressive regime of a future scientism dictatorship that Nobel laureate Bertrand Russell warned. Russell, if you're not familiar with him, and the young generation is not, they're historically illiterate, with some exceptions, Russell noted that collective passions have a penchant to inflame hatred and rivalry directed towards other groups. He was acutely aware that science is no substitute for virtue. The heart is as necessary for the good life as the head. And D'Angelo's screed falls into the dark, abysmal waters of genetic determinism that gave rise to racist fascism. And by the way, one of the reasons that the Jews were rounded up is because Hitler's regime and its book, very similar in its theme of racial purity, showed that they were suffering from communicable diseases, and therefore should be put into internment camps to protect the rest of society. And look how that came out. Also, it was the Germans who decided to euthanize all of those who were considered at any level to have mental problems for the betterment of society and to keep them from suffering further. You have no idea what can happen once this kind of insanity, this kind of hate campaign is so rampant that racist fascism is embraced willingly. Russell further cautioned that this distorted over-reliance on faux science, fake science, could be a curse to mankind, all of humankind, perhaps during its Icarus moment, wokeness will self-destruct under its own rashness and the internal fire of its undiscerning ardor. What carnage it leaves in its wake remains to be seen. Yet there is nothing new or original in the cultural rebellion we are witnessing. This game has been played out before in previous acts that strived for an adolescent and unreachable social perfection. It will be unpredictable. There will be blowback. In his Principia Mathematica, Isaac Newton observed that every action there is an equal opposing reaction. However, we have yet to witness how it will boomerang, but it will. In the meantime, a new class of wannabe priests is emerging within the woke movement, a priesthood David Hume warned about in his essays, Moral, Political, and Literary, which in turn will be the advisories to their form of liberty. Their liberty is to be right on all things at all times, and for you to be wrong on all things at all times. You're to be punished. You're to be isolated. You're to be purged. In fact, in the Los Angeles Times, just this week, there was the commentary, and I couldn't believe they would allow this to be published, but they did, that mocking people who die of COVID who are unvaccinated is acceptable. Wow. Los Angeles Times, shame on you. New York Times, shame on you. All the media, shame on you. These are the kind of political, ideological comments that tend to weaken our norms of open debate and tolerance of differences in favor of ideological conformity. And by the way, over 160 brilliant minds, academicians, and authors, liberal and conservative, including Noam Chomsky and Jonathan Haidt and Suzanne Heschel and Steven Pinker and Gloria Steinem and others, wrote a letter that gives a stark warning of the unwelcome consequences of the new culture of censorship that is being demonstrated in this woke nation now. The woke now demand retribution against its signers. In effect, everyone who signed the letter, all 160, are now to be punished. They're to be erased from society, no matter what their achievements, no matter how important their contributions, they are to be thrown out. This is like the Inquisition. The right to disagree in public discourse is not to be tolerated. Have those who are most rabidly eager to condemn and cancel the wide diversity of voices who disagree with their beliefs considered earlier precedents for their actions? It was the Spanish Inquisition. In principle, how many today are in effect labeled heretics or worse because they have spoken publicly in favor of free speech and opposed censorship? May not the woke movement in turn become the harbinger of a new Inquisition, a new platform of economic and social persecution by the powerful and wealthy waiting in the corridors after the cult, the sick and depraved cult of wokeness loses its steam? The causal problems to our terrified culture is, of course, far deeper and has been identified and analyzed repeatedly in the writings of Chris Hedges and Henry Giroux. Our nation thrives on victimizing others. Now the once disenfranchised victims of the liberal woke generation, erupting from its simmering angst and meaninglessness, are determined to be the new victimizers. What is the end game when a populist uprising of disillusioned and psychologically traumatized youth at the mercy of the capitalist parasitical march to claim more victims gets the upper hand? The movement has now evolved beyond its original demands of racial justice, and now it has been looking at all of our institutions, particularly law enforcement, private prison system. Do these need improving? You bet. Is the woke culture the ones to do it? Absolutely not. Now it is rapidly morphing into a massive autonomous cult of divisiveness and self-righteousness without a moral backbone that recognizes the essential values of forgiveness, reconciliation, and cooperative engagement for preserving a sane and productive culture that benefits us all. Thank you, Pope, for sharing your views against the woke culture and its dangers. You have 1.2 billion, more or less, Catholics. Hopefully, they get that message and push back and say no to the demands of the woke culture. I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you for watching, and have a nice day.